Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham filling in, and then Robert Harris doing it. Robert's got the biggest shoes to fill. Like, Landry's tall and all, and the OG's, like, been doing it for a long time. But Figgy is the best in the world at what he does.
Yes, sir.
So Robert Harris is trying to fill the big shoes today. And Figgy's listening. Figgy's live tweeting the show, by the way.
Like, yeah,
it's his day off, and he's live tweeting the show. Thanks for listening, Figgy. But go enjoy your day. Now, it looks like he's not feeling that great. He said a homemade medicine ball. He's making his own little medicine ball tea. I guess he's a little under the weather.
Medicine ball tea?
Yeah, you know, you can get those medicine balls at your local coffee shop. No free plugs here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you get those medicine balls. It's like some two teas mixed together?
Yeah.
Like a little bit of honey to soothe
lemonade
your throat.
In there as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, medicine ball is good. Medicine ball is good. Whenever I'm doing a bunch of shows, like I haven't done one in months, but whenever I'm doing a bunch of shows or I'm talking a lot, whether it's play-by-play, whatever, I don't do the medicine ball, but I'll do like some hot tea with honey.
Okay.
It just soothes
kinda
the throat.
Soothes the throat.
It just makes, yeah, you know, you got this, like, you're a former athlete. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you after practice, after games, like, what are you doing? You're in the ice tub.
Yep.
You know, you're icing the muscles. I only got one muscle to worry about. Like, the rest of me can be out of shape. The rest of me can be fat. I got to run. I got to exercise. I got to take care of the throat.
That voice got to be taken care of.
I got to take care of the throat. Cecil asked me what I was doing after the show because, you know, happy Memorial Day, everybody. And, of course, we want to honor and remember those that gave up the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom, and then everybody else gets to enjoy their Monday off, no work. And Cecil asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm going to go mow. Like, my grass is way too long right now. I'm going to go home and mow. So, Summit Springs, I'm sorry that I've been a bad neighbor for the last few days. But I'm gonna go mow whenever I get home. NBA playoffs going on right now. And first round, so it's like a little more difficult to really get into, like, until we get later on in the playoffs.
Really?
It was a caveat.
Okay.
Because this first round's been better than normal. Like, you got the Lakers and the Suns. Lakers defending champions. Mm-hmm. That's been a fascinating series. You've had the storyline going on with Brooklyn and Boston. Like, that's been fascinating. I feel like the storylines off the floor have actually been better than the games on the floor right now.
You think so?
Yeah, the storylines off the floor have been great.
Give me some.
Well, the first one's not so great. Now it's intriguing. It's high drama. It's, you know, middle day soap opera type of stuff. But, like, what's going on in this Boston-Brooklyn series? Like, the games haven't been that competitive. Brooklyn's kind of running away with the series. They're far superior than the Celtics are. But you have Kyrie Irving calling the city of Boston racist, which is, I mean, which is entertaining. I guess you can say that it's entertaining. There's some bad blood there, to say the least. Kyrie had a big game yesterday. He's stomping around on Mr. Celtics' head there at halftime, which was very fun.
That was fun.
And then it got ugly after the game with a Boston Celtic fan throwing a water bottle at him, which he's going to be that fan has been arrested, and he's going to be charged with assault with a dangerous weapon. They're throwing the book at him. That's right. Which I'm happy about. Like, there's no place at all in sports with throwing stuff at players. Like, that's outrageous. That guy needs to be thrown in jail for 10 years just to set an example to the rest of the sports world.
You got to set an example. You can't just have people just doing anything to the players. You're going to hurt somebody. You're putting them at risk. I think this is a good start. Make that guy an example. I mean, what, 2-3 days ago, somebody's pouring popcorn on Westbrook.
This is getting out of hand. Spitting at Trae Young.
Spitting at Trae Young. Like, you spit on somebody? Like,
yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Spit on somebody?
And now more than ever. Like, doesn't this guy know we've lived through a pandemic for the last year and a half?
Like, why would you even know?
Never do that, especially in the last 18 months.
He wasn't thinking. He probably was intoxicated doing whatever. But you just can't do those. You can't do those things. You got to keep the players safe. You got to keep the fans safe. I was telling you off air, they're going to try the wrong person one of these days. And it's going to be the malice in the palace all over again. They're going to try the wrong person, and they're going to go up there and handle their business. So let's just put an end to it all right now. Set an example, put rules in place. I think he's banned from the
For life.
From the garden for life, right?
Married,
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I hope he goes to jail for a long time too, because they need to get that part of sports out. Like, they need to get it out. They need to get out. Whatever. And you mentioned you mentioned just a second ago, like, they're going to try the wrong person. Like, that one person a long time ago was Mad Max Vernon Maxwell, and Vernon Maxwell is pretty mad on Twitter. Like, he's a pretty good Twitter follow. He's a good Twitter. I love Mad Max. Mad Max is the best. But he quote tweeted the clip of the bottle of water being thrown towards Kyrie Irving. And Maxwell said, "It's just a bottled water, right? If you feel disrespected, then do something about it or it'll keep happening. Guess how many times a fan made a comment about my stillborn daughter? It cost me some money and a suspension, but I sleep fine every night knowing I stood up for her." He went into the stands once, too.
Wow.
It's not, as widely acclaimed, I guess, as the malice in the palace. But Maxwell went up in the stands, too. Russell Westbrook would have went up in the stands when he got popcorn thrown on him the other day if he wasn't being held back.
Yeah.
Like, these dudes feel like they have all these fans feel like they have all the security in the world, and they do. Like, that's why they do these things, because they feel like they have all the security in the world. You know what would end it right away? Security guys, just back up. Back up one time. If it was Kendrick Perkins back in the day, if it was Kwame Brown, apparently he's a tough guy. Get out of the way, let him go into the stands. I bet you it never happens again.
You having a 6'9", 7-foot guy coming at you. What you going to do at his peak, high performer? Like, what are you going to do?
You're going to sit there and take the punch and get knocked out like that Pistons fan at the Malice in the Palace when Jermaine O'Neal squared him up. You remember that? The little short dude? Like, squared up Jermaine O'Neal. O'Neal's like, okay, you challenged me. Like, if you're going to throw up the fist, it's like using a weapon, right? You flash it, you better use it.
Yeah.
And he didn't use the hands, or O'Neal did, knocked him straight on his butt.
Man, you got to get under control. Otherwise, it's going to get hectic, man, and you don't want that. So I'm glad they're throwing the book at that kid in Boston, and we'll see what happens from there.
What'd you think about the Kyrie stomping the head of the Mr. Celtic logo at midcourt?
Oh, I loved it. It makes it fun. Like, it makes it fun. I'm 33 years old, born in 87. So when I was watching the NBA, it was all rivals. It was all hate each other. It was physical. It was just like, that was the NBA I grew up on and knew. That's my dad loved. So now, to me, it's soft. So to see little stuff like that, it's awesome. To see little, like, Trae Young in the garden hushing the crowd and cussing them out and the whole night. Like, I love that type of stuff. It makes it fun. So to see Kyrie at halftime, just do a little something petty. Go to half court and just, step on the leprechaun or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. Leprechaun. I call him Mr. Celtic, but he is a leprechaun. I loved it. I love it, too. Look, the reason that I love sports is the drama that goes with it, like the storylines. Much younger, I cared more about like the wins and losing of my hometown team. Like, you kind of, whenever you're younger, you're a little bit more diehard. You ride the wins and losses a little bit more than whenever you get older. Now I just love the storylines. I love a hard foul on LeBron James and seeing him pout about it after he gets a hard foul. I love seeing the stomping on the leprechaun at midcourt and seeing how the opposing team gets upset. I love that. That's my reality television. I think it's great drama, great storyline, and I think it's a reason why a lot of us love sports and watch sports. Like, one of my favorite clips of the NFL is when Terrell Owens went to the star and did his little touchdown dance, and then who was it that knocked him straight off the star? Like, that stuff is cool. That stuff is great. Like, I draw the line whenever you start hurting people and you're in the faint, you're in the crowd throwing stuff at people. Like, that's stupidity. But stepping on the logo at midcourt, like, that's just good drama. That's just good bad blood. Who doesn't like bad blood in sports and their, daytime television?
That's all fun, man. I have no problem with it. I want to see more of it. Like, again, Trae Young in the garden, I think two games ago. That was so fun.
It's like Reggie Miller back
in
the day.
It was awesome. It was, well, I'd say this. One thing I noticed about this playoffs. when Madison Square Garden is jam packed, yeah. NBA is better. When the Garden when the Knicks are in the playoffs and the Garden is it's just better. It just the scenery. I mean, to see Spike Lee on the sideline, put his head down, shaking it. It was just awesome to see, man. I love the atmosphere, and the playoffs has been fun for the first round. It's been pretty cool.
Now, that is cool. Madison Square Garden rocking, getting their first playoff win in like 2 decades.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Problem is that it hadn't been a great series on the floor. Like, the Hawks are the better team. That team's exciting, by the way. Like, I've always said that Clint Capella was Daryl Morey's best draft pick ever. Mm. I kind of hated to see him go. I understood it at the time. But seeing him and Trae Young have that connection together on the floor is pretty cool to see. Trae Young.
Baller.
Am I overstepping my boundaries here a little bit when I say he reminds me a little bit of Steph Curry? Am I going too crazy with that?
No,
am I going too far?
No.
Robert shaking his head yes, saying that
wow.
I'm going too far. He reminds me of Steph Curry.
I mean similarities. Yeah. He has the shot.
I would say he has the range, maybe not the shot. Like, he's not going to shoot at the high percentages that Curry is, but he's got
sure?
the range.
He has the range. He has the confidence. He can pass the ball similar to Steph.
Yeah.
They both don't play defense. I mean, it's everything. It's the same. There's coming out, the comparison was Steph Curry.
Yeah.
So I don't see an issue with it.
He reminds me of a young Steph Curry. Whenever you were shaking your head there, like, what's the one thing that I was going a little too far, reaching a little bit whenever I say that Young's like a young Steph?
I don't know. I guess I got to see what the Hawks do this playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, they're better than New York. They're going to get past New York. And who they got next? They'll have the winner out of Philly and Washington.
Yeah, and Philly's running.
Philly's going to run that.
So it looks like they're going to sweep.
I don't know. I just got to see, I guess, what he could do with this team.
Yeah.
What can he take with this team?
What's y'all's favorite first round series right now?
Lakers Suns, by far.
Lakers Suns is really good television right now. Because and you have so many storylines in that series, because you have the Suns who like they weren't tanking late in the regular season, and Chris Paul had that little quote with, I think it was Shaq or Chuck, I forget which one, on Inside the NBA, but he like cut off their question saying, look, we got to go through everybody in the West, doesn't matter when we play them.
Yeah.
Then you have LeBron James chasing another title. Can Anthony Davis be be that Robin for LeBron for a second straight season, and now he's hurt.
Yep.
Like he had the groin strain, had to leave the game yesterday. His status is up in the air for Game 5. Chris Paul's battling through a shoulder injury. Like, it's a good young team in Phoenix, although Chris Paul's older. Like, going up against the old guard, Lakers tied at 2. Like, that to me is little kind of an old school NBA drama there in round number 1.
Yeah, a lot of fun. AD worries me because I want the Lakers to do well. I'm a Cavaliers fan first. Shout out to Figgy Fig. We both Cleveland Cavaliers fans from Cleveland, but I want to see the Lakers do well. I want LeBron to do. I'm a LeBron fan. I want to see the Lakers do well, but it worries me when AD keeps getting hurt. You know what I mean? Like, it's just keep aggravating injuries here and there, and then LeBron dealing with his ankle. He's not fully healthy, and they don't shoot that well from 3, being the Lakers. So we'll see, man. I love Devin Booker. I love what Chris Paul can do. I mean, it seems like everywhere Chris Paul goes that year he gets there, that team, wherever team he's on, they elevate. They do much better than the year before. He has something. I think we overlook him, and I think we take him for granted, but he's one of the better point guards to ever play this game.
I think he's on a short list. I hate LeBron James. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
What? Ow!
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why later on in the show. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Here's the real problem with no numbers on the rosters first.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Cecil Shorts, Jeremy Branham with you, Robert Harris Jr. behind the glass. Robert, we're a little bit later. We're going to get some stock tips from you, if that's all right.
All right, I'm cool with it.
What to play this week. I don't know if we can call it the Diamond Hand segment or not. We'll get some stock tips from Robert Harris coming up a little bit later. 713-572-4610. All right, last week, the big fuss. OTA is going on now. It's a great time. Football's back. The smell of the grass is in the air. Like, it's right around the corner, and you can feel it. And it's an exciting time, whether your team's going to be lousy or not. It's fun. It's fun. The NFL's great. It's the best sport in the world. I love every aspect of it. I love the betting aspect of it. I love the fantasy football aspect of it.
Ooh.
I love the rebuilding. You got a little excited there when I said the fantasy football
man.
Side of it.
I'm in love. Third year, I was a champion in my league last year.
Congratulations.
Pat myself on the back. Humble brag. Pat myself on the back.
Five-time Dynasty League champion.
We need to do a podcast together and
Sell our content. I'm not doing it for free. I'm not going to do the podcast for free.
I'm with you on that.
Yeah, we got to sell the content a little bit. Thanks for the round of applause, by the way. I'm taking my bow here behind the microphone. But much of the fuss last week in the day one of OTAs, or at least day one that the media was allowed to attend, for the first time in John McClain's career, there were some names without a number next to the roster. And here's where, to me, the problem, Cecil, in this isn't so much that they handed the media some rosters without the number on a few names. The problem that I find with it whenever I evaluate the Houston Texans organization, and I think the OG was saying that this was something the PR and the media relations staff had nothing to do with over at NRG, was the fact that they didn't really understand the recourse of this, like the backlash of this. Mm. Like, this is something that they did. I'm sure this is something they had conversations about, and this is something they decided, okay, we're not going to do this, and I'm sure that they had their reasons, and I'm sure some of their reasons were good. The problem that I have with it, though, is they did not anticipate the backlash correctly, because they immediately give in and say, this is a problem, we're not going to do it again, we're going to have the corrected rosters whenever, you know, the next time we see you guys, whatever the case may be. How, as an organization, do you not realize that that is coming? Like, it's a pretty bad mistake, I think, to not have the numbers on the roster. To me, it is a bigger mistake to not understand the firestorm that was going to come because of it. And it's, to me, it's a microcosm of the organization, is that they make so many decisions and so many moves where they don't really calculate what is going to be the response.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because they don't care, which I hope that's the reason. I hope it is because they don't care. Because Bill Belichick ain't caring up in New England, and that's fine by me. If you're not going to care, that's cool. Like, if you're going to keep it in-house, that's fine, but you better win some games, right? You can't go 4-12, 2-14, or I guess next year 2-15, because there's going to be 17 games. Like, if you're going to pull that stuff, you better win. You better win. So I have two problems with it. One, not being able to understand the backlash that was going to come because of that move and not being able to address it and handle it and say the reasons why you did it. And then secondly, if you're going to pull stuff like that, it's much easier to swallow when you're winning 13 games a year.
True. To go with your point, I don't think they thought thoroughly or went in detail about why they did that, right? They didn't think that whole thing through. Okay, if we do this, what would the backlash be? Do we care? What are we going to change? Are we going to stick with it? Because if you don't care, like the Patriots or whatever,
sure,
they're not going to change.
Own it.
We're fine. Hey, that's what we decided to do. This is how it's going to be until a so and so date, or this is how it's going to be until training camp, whatever the case may be. Just stick with it.
I can deal with that.
If you just stick with it and say this is what's going to be, all right, cool. We just got to deal with it, right?
We might make fun of you. We might call you Patriot South. We might say you're silly.
But you're standing.
But
on
you're
it.
Standing by your stance, and you're standing on the table, believing in what you thought.
So now we will deal with it. We respect that, mm-hmm. right? But now you waver as soon as somebody has said something, right? You waver as soon as McClain makes a whole commercial video about it. You waver when it's all this uproar. So now we can do whatever we want with you. As soon as we complain about something, guess what? Something get changed.
Yep.
So for me, whatever you decide to do, stick with it. Like, just stay with it. To me, the number thing wasn't that big of a deal, but I understand. I think I'm kind of similar to you. I don't think things are that serious.
Right.
I have a problem with it, right? But I understand why. Because it's, I mean, what, 45, 50 new guys on the team? Mm-hmm. But to me, it's like they're not doing anything anyways. Like, they're not going to show you what. You're not going to see anything without pads on, without helmets, without – it's just jersey numbers. So
sure.
I get – but I totally understand. But if you're going to do that, stand on it.
Yes.
Like man up. Like, just be like, no, this is what we decided to do. And when training camp comes out, we'll have a full roster available. But this is what – and it's a give a reason. Just say, hey, this is what we're doing because of A, B, and C. There still may be roster moves. We're still evaluating. We're still doing whatever the case may be. Stick with it. But don't just this, oh, we're so sorry, boom, 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 boom. I just don't like that.
This might be controversial to say because we're, you know, the source of Texans Talk Sports Radio 610. But, like, it's OTAs. Like, you're seeing guys run in circles and, like, tap each other on the back. Like, you don't need to know which rookie is, you know, looking good when he moves to his left, take a step to get a drink of water.
JB, they're not even going against each other.
Right.
Like, the office wasn't even outside. Like, what is going on?
They're stretching. They're running a little bit of wind sprints. They're probably not even reaching 100% sprint speed.
No.
Like, they don't need the numbers. I didn't care about that, to be honest with you. I know that's not a popular opinion. And I know that it aggravated some that have been around football way longer than I have. But I don't care about that sort of stuff. Like, if you're going to be the Patriot South, cool, own it. Own it and win a Super Bowl in 5 years. And then we'll forget all about it.
Yeah.
But to waver back and forth, to be, oh, we should do this. Oh, never mind. We're going to do this. Like, hey, if you want Jack Easterby to be the guy that is over there as the team president, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and you're going to stand by him and you're going to stand strong by him, okay, that's cool. Like, you're taking a unpopular stance, but you're being bold about it. And I'm cool with bold. And sometimes I'm cool with unpopular. I might not agree with it, but if you want to be bold and unpopular and then go win a Super Bowl in 2 to 3 years and tell everybody else to stuff it, I'd respect the heck out of that.
I'm with it, man. I'm right with you. To piggyback real quick. You're literally not doing anything
right
with OTAs right now. Yeah. Like, nothing. Like, if they came out there with no jerseys on, you wouldn't be saying anything. But it's the fact they had jerseys on. They're just literally going through walkthroughs and practicing and going over simple stuff on defense and offense. Like, there's nothing to talk about, really. But I get it. I understand.
So when that happened, I went to the Houston Texans website, and I pulled up their roster online, and I pulled up the numbers. And there was a lot of players who were not – like, they listed their name, but they just didn't have a number assigned to them. Okay. Like, I don't know if it was, like, maybe they don't have a jersey assigned yet, or maybe they're just doing that on purpose. I don't know. I don't know the reason. Now that if you go there, they have all the – they have all the players. They have all the jerseys assigned to each and every player. But, yeah, I thought it was much ado about nothing. I really did. Like, I thought it was kind of silly to go through all of that and to have this big stink about jerseys, no jerseys on a team who's going to go 3-13, 3-14 on the year. But I do want to ask you about OTAs. Like, for a player that is in OTAs, like, that's serious to them because any time that they're being evaluated by coaches, any time a coach is looking at them, look, they record all of those practices now. Yeah. How can a player impress at OTAs? They're not doing anything, you know, no pads, not going up against one another. But how can you grab the attention of somebody that's evaluating you?
Knowing your assignment. I think that's the biggest thing right now. They're probably, and I wasn't there, but just thinking back to when I was playing, and things are a little different now. But it's a new coaching staff, so these guys get to come in a little early. But just knowing, like, you're on defense, understanding, okay, when you're walking through the Lovie Smith cover two, and you're a linebacker, no one getting to the right spot, him not having to correct you 3, 4, 5 times in a row. That's how you get impressed. Like, knowing where you're supposed to be, being good in your drops, being good in your assignments, being good in your technique, asking questions, picking the brain of the guys. So right now it's more mental than anything. If guys can, the coaches, they can be impressed by you mentally right now. They'll be like, okay, well, I might be able to trust this guy. Right. And then once mini camps and once you get to the OTAs where it's a part of actually, you're actually practicing, then going out there and doing well and doing your assignment. But right now, just mentally being there, being sharp, being on time, tuning into the Zoom meetings or whatever, or in-person meetings, just being available, asking questions. Because right now is your first impression on the new offensive coordinator, on the new defensive coordinator, on the new head coach, on the new GM. So they're evaluating everything. You know what I mean? So right now, mentally sharp, showing leadership, and just doing everything like a pro.
You know, that's kind of what I was getting to and wanted to ask you, because to me it's more about being like an employee, right? Like, are you going to be a good teammate?
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing athletically that you can do to really impress at that point. Like, you're not going to fly over the field and make a huge hit on a halfback sweep to the right, play a middle linebacker. You're not going to have great one-on-one coverage, you know, against Brandon Cooks, things like that. But they're starting to evaluate what you're going to be like as a teammate. Hey, are you showing up on time?
Yep.
Are you staying a little bit late? Are you asking the right questions? To me, it's almost more of a disqualifier. Like, if you have a 7th-round draft pick who's showing up late and he's missing meetings, things like that, okay, you know immediately that guy's gone.
Yep.
You're going to cut him. So, to me, OTAs is more about, these are guys that are going to really be in the conversation, and I'm also going to find 3 or 4 guys that I probably know at the end of the day aren't going to be a member of this organization.
No, you're absolutely right. And whether, as a player, you know this, and the coaches know this for sure, they're evaluating you at all times. Mm-hmm. They're making their depth chart in their head at all times. Like, this is what it is. Like, you have to show that you're a professional. You have to show that you're taking this seriously. Because if you're not, especially if you're a young guy, if you're not, you're going to be the bottom of the totem pole.
Yep.
And now your reps are going to be limited. Now you got to prove more in your limited reps. And it's just, you're putting yourself back in the depth chart and you're putting yourself behind. So it's very important that you're being an employee, being a pro, especially with new coaches and new staff. And the way they're trying to run things over there, they're looking for professionals. They're looking for guys that want to handle their business appropriately in the way that they want it. So if you're not making the first impression, it's going to be tough.
So Lance Berkman named the head coach of the HBU baseball program today. They had a press conference a little bit earlier. Here is a commercial break. Round of applause. Big Puma, round of applause. Got dismissed from the Hall of Fame voting way too soon. one of the better switch hitters in Major League Baseball history, underrated switch hitter in Major League Baseball history. Here is a commercial break homework assignment, because Lance Berkman named the head baseball coach of HBU. Congratulations to Berkman and HBU. Homework assignment during the break: a great player in any sport who has been a good head coach. We'll discuss it next. Also, Julio Jones, where does he end up? Which NFL team will grab one of the best receivers in the NFL next on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, welcome back to In the Loop. Cecil Shorts, I'm Jeremy Brand. I'm happy to have you with us. Robert Harris doing all the hard work behind the glass. So I gave you a commercial break homework assignment. You can get in on this, listeners. 713-572-4610, number to call, number to text. Great players, great, of any sport, great players who then were also great coaches in their sport. Because Lance Berkman, great player, hired by HBU to run their baseball program. And this isn't like my prediction on how I think Lance Berkman's going to do at HBU. I think that was a great hire. I think Lance Berkman's going to be great. I think he's the anomaly to the rule. Here's my theory, Cecil, and I don't think this is any sort of hot take or anything like this. I have a belief that great players, like let's make it very clear. I'm saying great players are usually pretty lackluster coaches in their chosen sport. Okay. And the reason that I think this is because coaching is not easy. Like coaching, you know this, Cecil, coaching is incredibly hard.
Yes.
Like to make sure you have the right culture, to make sure you have the right players, whether you're coaching professionally or in the college game, recruiting if you're in the college game, making sure that the locker room or the clubhouse, whatever the case may be, to make sure that the chemistry is tight. There are so many hours that go into being a coach. You have to be obsessive about coaching, I think, to be a good coach. And let's face it, if you're Michael Jordan and you've made all this money, what incentive do you have to be a great coach? Like, you're not fighting tooth or nail. Like, you have to be passionate about it. And there's many, many examples of great players that were not great coaches. The first one that comes to my mind, look, I'm a Cougar till I die. Go Cougs. Clyde Drexler, as a college basketball coach, it didn't work. It just didn't. Chris Mullin over at St. John's, it didn't really work. Penny Hardaway doing it right now at Memphis. He's been pretty good. I mean, I think he needs to do it a couple more years before we know which way to go with Penny Hardaway. Patrick Ewing doing it right now at Georgetown. There's been many, many soccer coaches that have become managers of their clubs because they were great former players. Like I've heard Craig Biggio mentioned as the Houston Astro manager. Like fans would want Craig Biggio to be the Astros manager. No thanks. I'm a believer that you do not hire great players to be your coach. Do you guys have any? We'll start with you, Cecil. Do you have any great players that were great coaches? There's a couple.
Okay, so.
See how you did on your homework.
I had, homework assignment. I don't know how long the commercial break was. It wasn't long enough, but it wasn't. I got a few.
I picked the shortest break to do it.
I got a few. So the first one I got four names for you, all right? The first one I got, he only coached 3 seasons.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
3 winning seasons.
I know where you're going.
That's took the Indiana Pacers to the 2000 NBA Finals. Larry Bird.
That's a great one because Larry Bird's at the top of my list. And we had a tweet a little bit earlier, too, during that break from Donut Texan. He mentioned Larry Bird as one of the two. And I agree. Larry Bird, to me, was the best player, best coach that you can mention in this conversation. Now, I would argue this. 3 years. I think he was the team president before he was the head coach. So he kind of just moved into that seat. He already knew that the team was good. Like you mentioned, three good seasons, conference finals, then lost in the NBA finals. Like pretty easy to make that move, and he only did it for 3 years.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like kind of got burned out pretty quick. Now he was good at it. Like I'm so I can't really say that that's a bad answer because that is the one answer that I would give, and he did have great success. But it does also prove my theory right a little bit that you have to be passionate to be a long-time head coach. Although, I'm going to give you Bird. Bird's a good answer.
Okay, cool. Now, this one, I'm going baseball. I'm going baseball, all right? You ready?
Yeah.
I don't know if he was a star or a superstar. I'm going to let you call him. I'm going to give you the stats. 9-time All-Star.
Well, that's pretty good.
18-year career.
All right.
1971 batting title.
That's good.
1971 NL MVP award.
That's good.
And won the Golden Glove in 65.
All right.
Joe Torre.
Okay, I'm going to give you that one. You go, was it 7-time All-Star?
Nine.
That's a great player. That's a great player. And you know what's interesting about Torrey is that I think most people would say he had a better managing career than he did a playing career.
Wow.
Because he was with the Yankees and he won some titles, but that's a good one. I like that one, Cecil.
Okay.
All right, Robert, what do you have?
All right, I've been on the Google machine and just been doing some homework. For controversial reasons,
okay.
We talked about this on off break, and you said, please say that. Mm-hmm. And I've been in this radio game for a long time, so I know how to stir it up.
Yeah, you toss it up a little bit.
Yeah, toss it up a little bit. Get some more calls. I'm going to say Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr wasn't the greatest player on the Chicago
That's
Bulls. He was
same.
A great role player.
No. Not a great player.
Not a great player, but turned out to be he – Mark Jackson set it up for him. I give Mark Jackson all the kudos, but he steered the ship and won. He started the dynasty.
No, listen, me, you, and JB can coach Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson. I'm just saying.
Okay.
So you're arguing it from the other side of it. You're arguing it from the coaching aspect side of it. I was arguing it from the player aspect side of it that, yeah, you can't consider a role player in that conversation as great player as a great coach because, in fact, I think role players make the very best coaches. Those guys who aren't very good, they know just enough to kind of hang around in their sport, like A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch was a journeyman backup catcher, great manager for the Houston Astros. Like, I feel like role players are the way to go. What else you got?
Oh, okay, and my truest answer, Phil Jackson. Played with the Knicks. And
See, I don't know if he's good enough of a player.
You know what? Let me look it up. Let me see.
So the other one that Donut Texan sent in was Pat Riley. Pat Riley's a pretty good one. 713-572-4610. Text him in, call him in. We'll get to you here in a second, Chris. 713-572-4610. A local one? You want a pretty good local one? Rudy Tomjanovich. Rudy Tomjanovich, pretty good.
Yeah.
Rudy T's pretty good. Texter, 713-572-4610. And I'm glad he went here because I wasn't thinking about track and field. Leroy Burrell, our coach over at U of H.
I mean, that's impressive.
I mean, gold medalist.
Yes, that's
and
impressive.
And what they've done at U of H, Speed City. That's a great answer, too.
Absolutely.
And that was a great in his profession, now a great coach. Not many of them. The odds are long. There's far more failures who are great players than there are great coaches.
Lenny Wilkins.
That's pretty good. I don't know much about Lenny Wilkins. I know he was a good basketball player. I don't know if he was a great basketball player. Let's see what Chris says. 713-572-4610. Chris, what you got?
Yeah, I mean, Bill Russell was player coach and won a title.
Yeah, see, player coach is a little difficult for me.
Was he an official head coach?
Yeah. The examples of great player, great coach are much older. Like, they're before modern sports history. These days with cap management and social media and guys wanting to build their own brand and just everything that goes into understanding a roster and a team and all of that stuff, it's so much more difficult. There are a lot more examples of guys being bad at it than good. And the NBA is a great example. Like, Magic Johnson was not a good coach. No. Michael Jordan's an all-time great player and a horrible general manager, team builder. Larry Bird is probably the best one at it. The best example of a role player becoming a great coach or general manager, Ozzie Newsome was a long-time Cleveland Brown and then was – moved in the front office and paid his dues for a dozen years before being one of the very best general managers in sports. So it takes
That's a good one.
Guys it that is. Are willing to show up and there's a lot to learn on the front office and coaching side before you can become great at it, which frankly makes it preposterous when someone like a Deshaun Watson says, I want to be involved in hiring the next coach or general manager. It's just way there are guys that dedicated their lives and work every day to do it full time. And you want to basically say, well, I'm a good player, so I should have a say. It's totally doesn't make any sense. But that's all I got. I
appreciate the call, Chris. And Chris is right. I think Chris brings up a lot of interesting examples. And one, I think the modern day aspect of it too, is something that makes it a lot more challenging. Like, this is something that you could do back in the day where it was a little bit easier because there wasn't as many elements as there are nowadays. And, you know, the advanced metrics is one example of that. Like, you don't have that back in, you know, the 60s or even like in the 80s. You didn't really have a whole lot of that going on. 713-572-4610. Let's go to Lamont. Lamont, what's up?
Hey, man, I really don't know. And by the way, I'm Donut Texan, man.
Yeah, I knew it.
I really don't know if he was a great manager, but with Pete Rose up in there and also Doc Rivers, man.
Yeah.
I think if you can put Rudy T in there, you can put Doc Rivers in there.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's fair, Lamont. Appreciate the call. I think I would consider Doc Rivers to be in that same mold. Like, if we're going to give Rudy T the allowance to be that great player and also a great head coach, I think you have to consider Doc Rivers in that conversation. Pat Riley, something that Donut Texan said as well, Lamont said, and I would consider Pat Riley in there. A lot more failures than successes. Pete Rose is interesting. I don't know if Pete Rose's managerial career was all that great. Now, he was great in the sports book. Like, he was pretty good there. I think his win-loss record in the sports book was great. I would say his win-loss record in the sports book was probably better than his win-loss record in the managerial career. I don't know that for sure, but I think. What have you seen? You have another one over there, Cease?
I'm looking at Doc Rivers. I'm not sure he was a star, though.
Yeah, see, that's where the coaching aspect of it's qualified.
Absolutely.
But I think his point was if we're going to give Rudy T that allowance, right, you have to give Doc that allowance. And I would think both are debatable. Like, I think both would need to be a little bit more under the microscope and be, you know, looked at a little bit further. Carl Lewis was one that was mentioned here on a second ago. He does great. I mean, that whole athletic, the whole U of H track program is amazing. Oh, yeah. Tom Landry. Jack Pardee, which is somebody near and dear to my heart. He was mentioned on the text line as well. Felipe Alou. 713-572-4610. Fletcher, what you got?
Hey, I was just going to say that sometimes the great players don't make great coaches and don't last. We're talking about the elite, top of the line, best players, because they don't want to have to put up with people that don't have a work ethic like they did. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, those guys were great because, not just because they were talented, but because they worked and they were super competitive, and they might just think these guys are too soft and they just want to chew them out all the time because they're not producing at a high level. Anyway, that's all I got.
Yeah, I think that's a good point too, Fletcher. Sure. To me, there's many variables, and somebody corrected me on the text line. Thank you for correcting me. Pete Rose apparently won a World Series as a manager. I didn't know that. I thought all those titles came before Pete Rose was a manager. So I guess you would put Pete Rose in that conversation. Still think his win-loss record was better in the sports book than in the manager seat. But it did win a World Series, the all-time hit king in, you know, Major League Baseball history. So, yes, Pete Rose would make the qualification there. Like, Phil Garner just came in. Phil Garner, to me, not a great player. Like, that's a little bit more, I think he made an all-star or two, but to me that's a little bit more role player than superstar. Like, I'm talking about guys who finished top five in MVP voting, maybe won an MVP vote. And to Fletcher's point, like, there's so many things that it's hard to make that transition. Fletcher's saying that, you know, you can't chew them out and can't do the things that, you know, the stars could do. I think that's one point of it. I think it's harder for a superstar who spent so much time working in their craft as a professional to also put in those same hours afterwards. Because, look, I mean, like, if you're – like, it's just – I mean, Michael Jordan's the best that ever did it on the basketball floor. But Magic Johnson was a coach in the NBA. Bird was a coach in the NBA. You've seen a lot of greats try their hand at coaching or managing. And, look, if you had a great professional career, you want to enjoy retirement. Yeah. Like, if I made $100 million in my sports radio career, I don't want to go be a program director. And if I did, I bet you I'd do a lousy job at it because I wouldn't have that drive. I wouldn't have that fire. Like, I was one of the best sports radio guys ever. I made tons of money doing it. Where is my drive? Where is that want to? Like, it's very easy not to have it. And the margins are so thin that to be the very best at what you're doing, you have to have that extra oomph to push across. Mike Ditka is another one that was mentioned. I think that's a good one, too.
Ditka, you know, was a star in his day.
I think he had some good years, if I remember correctly.
I know he was tight end, right? It was different back then.
Different back then than it is now, certainly.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think he did have a few really good years playing, and then really, I mean, a couple really good years as a head coach. So that's Tony Dungy is another one. But there's that's kind of fringy. You know what I'm saying?
I think he's more of a role player. I think outside looking in, I think role players can relate to the average professional or college player better than the superstar, right? Because the superstar is few and far in between.
Yeah.
The role player, I feel like they can understand. You can understand them better. They can reach you better. They might have they're more down to earth, right? They can understand, okay, we got to put this work in. Where the superstar, like a Peyton Manning they did unbelievable things. And it's kind of hard for that unbelievable thing that you did to try to create it from somebody else.
Yes.
And get the same result, if that makes sense.
That to me is one of the biggest variables of why it's difficult for a great pro to be a great coach. And also one of the other things is, like, they can get by on sheer athleticism.
Yeah.
Like, if you're LeBron James, like,
naturally
you're doing,
gifted.
You're doing things that are unheard of that you can just get by without being at the right spot. Like, There's a lot of fringe guys that play professionally that the only reason that they're still in the league is because they know exactly where to be at the exact right time.
Like, right.
Jonathan Joseph, for some reason, is the name that comes to mind. Now, yep. Jonathan Joseph was a great pro in his heyday. But the reason that Jonathan Joseph has lasted as long as he has and has still been a factor in the NFL until recently is because he knew exactly where to be, knew how to defend, knew all the nuances of the game. Whereas if you're like, who was a great corner that didn't last long but had some really good, like, Darrell Revis might not be the best example. Who was the guy that was married to Olivia Pope who was with the Eagles?
Nnamdi Asamoah.
Like, that guy was great. He was a phenomenal athlete.
Married to Olivia Pope.
Only a few will get that joke. It's not really a joke, but that's what I know her as. But,
oh, that's awesome.
But he was a guy who was like an elite athlete for the position, right?
Yes.
But why was he only elite for 3 to 4 years?
Yeah.
Probably not going to be a great coach. Jonathan Joseph, elite for 3 to 4 years, but then had a 15-year NFL career.
He'll be awesome.
I think that's the guy that I'd want to have coach my team, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's an interesting conversation. I think Lance Berkman, though, I know we got a little sidetracked on that, 713-572-4610, but the reason that I brought up that conversation, Lance Berkman, who I consider a great baseball player and one of the better switch hitters, under-the-radar switch hitters of all time, named the head coach of the HBU baseball program. Think it's a great hire. Congratulations to both of them. Julio Jones is on the trade block in the NFL. The Atlanta Falcons, it looks like they want to get rid of that huge contract as they go through a partial rebuild. Although, I mean, Matt Ryan's still there. They just drafted Pitts from Florida, who I think is going to be one of the better tight ends. Still have very good pieces there in Atlanta, but they want to get rid of the contract. Julio Jones, who would benefit for trading for the Falcons superstar receiver? Here's a few teams that have checked in, Cecil. Seattle, they're the latest to check in. That's the latest report, which always makes me a little curious. Like, the team that usually trades for the player isn't the team that is reported to be interested. Like, that's always like a team that fell short of trading for the player. But Seattle, Tennessee, Green Bay, New England, Baltimore, they've all been linked to Julio Jones. Who do you think has the most to gain out of those teams?
Probably New England. They need a number one guy. They brought in some good tight ends in Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, but they still don't have the big-time receiver. They brought in some role players, but they don't have, like, the big-time guy. I think they got Nelson Aguilar now and a few other guys, but I think New England would be huge, especially with Cam Newton being there. Surround him with weapons, see what he can do. If he can't do it, guess what? You got Mac Jones there. Seattle would be good. That would be fun.
It would be fun.
It would be fun.
You have
Metcalf,
yeah.
And Lockett. That would be fun. But I don't know how are you going to spread the ball like that. I don't know where Julio is mentally, his career. He still want 100 catches, you know what I mean? He still want to be the guy, or can he step back and be a number two or be a more of a role guy? Still can make plays, no doubt about it. But right. So I guess those two.
You know, Baltimore's interesting to me from that second point that you made, though. Like, if he wants to be the guy, like, he would be the guy with Baltimore. The problem is, he's not going to put up the numbers that he'd put up some of these other places, because Baltimore is not going to fling the ball around like a New England might. Like, Seattle definitely would. Like, if you have those three together,
be fun.
I mean, Russell Wilson would be throwing 50 times a game.
Yes.
But with those targets that he would have. But, like, Green Bay is also pretty fascinating, because is that something that would get Aaron Rodgers' attention and all of a sudden bring him back to camp? So, I mean, there's some intriguing names.
San Francisco, I think, would be nice.
You know, I think I read that they're out of the sweepstakes.
Are they out?
Yeah, I saw something. Now, this could always change.
Right.
Like, I mean, all of a sudden, if Atlanta starts to move the goalposts forward a little bit and bring some other teams back into contention, from what I've read on Twitter, and you can always believe Twitter, is that San Francisco is out of the Julio Jones sweepstakes.
I would think they would be in it because of Kyle and the history over there in Atlanta.
Well, I think they were, but only for a certain price. And it looks like Atlanta's wanting a little bit more than what some teams are willing to offer. Look, Julio Jones is a great player. I still think he's very good. But the big contract, and I think Atlanta's holding out for a first-round pick.
Is he worth that?
That's the question. To me, that's the biggest reason why Julio Jones has not been traded. I don't believe Atlanta's been offered a first-round pick for Julio Jones yet. Mm. And I believe that the first team that does offer a first-round pick to Atlanta for Julio Jones will get Julio Jones. The question that you pose, though, which to me is a fair question, and right now what the rest of the NFL is telling us, in my opinion, is no, Julio Jones is not worth a first-round draft pick.
Oh, that's tough. Off his injury history the last 2 or 3 years, I think I have to agree. Probably a second or third. But first round pick, I expect him to come in and have 1,200 yards, lead the league and whatever. He's not that. I don't know if he can be that guy for the next 2 or 3 years. He might have one or two left, but if I'm trading a first round pick, I expect a solid 4 to 5 year production window. And he's 32 years old.
Yeah. And a first round pick to me, I want 5 years on a rookie scale.
Yeah.
And Julio Jones making a ton of money for the Atlanta Falcons. We'll take a quick break when we come back. Deshaun Watson, the saga continues. What do the Texans do with him, and what to look at for OTAs for the Texans over the next coming days on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.